Welcome, everyone, to the Pop Culture Podcast by Fantastic Geek. My name is Matt, and joining me, as always, is Pete. Hello, Pete.
Hello, Matt. Hello, everybody. Here today, bringing you the week in geek as of this recording on Friday, February 9th.
Indeed. You know, Pete, we were looking forward to a couple weeks off from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. it being away, and we had some ideas of things that we could fill in the spot, but it was like, you know what, we'll concentrate on Star Trek Discovery, we'll have ourselves a little rest. Then the last week happened where 18,000 things entered the pop culture sphere. Yeah, some Super Bowl related, others just, I don't know, not. And Pete, it begs a podcast. Where are we going to start?
Let's begin, Matt, with Solo, a Star Wars story. Our question, ruining childhoods yet again or amusing space yarn?
Pete, there is an entire generation of people who already have had their childhoods ruined by Star Wars.
How many times has Star Wars ruined childhoods, though? It seems to happen other than our generation growing up with the original. Of course, beloved. The prequels, I liked. I make no apologies for being a Star Wars apologist. But, you know, the criticism over The Last Jedi has much of it been greatly unfounded. And then there was this pervasive fear and cloud hanging over Star Wars, given some of the, shall I say, fan, and I put fan in air quote, reviews, starting with Rotten Tomatoes, where the critical score was exceptionally high, tying Empire Strikes Back, yet the fan score, the audience score, I should say, in the 50s. Huge disconnect. Something that was found to later be tied to, Matt, an alt-right Facebook group, which did not like the presentation of minorities, of women in their Star Wars, and a guy bragged about getting bots to write fake reviews. The same thing is going on right now, Matt, with a film I've seen, a film you will see next Thursday, we'll podcast a week from today, with Black Panther. So as this teaser to the teaser came out, and then the full teaser, so you had the teaser on Super Bowl Sunday, and then you had the actual teaser Monday morning during Good Morning America. People have finally seen this now, and oh my gosh, either Star Wars has ended for them or Star Wars continues. Oh, and yeah, the Game of Thrones guys got a series of Star Wars films. It's not clear how many now that they're developing too. So lot to process, Matt.
It is. And well, let's start with the preview there. The preview makes it look like an amusing space yarn in which there are all sorts of adventures. And in addition to the charismatic and devil may care Han Solo, it seems he's surrounded by a bunch of people who may exist on the fringes of society. And some of those people are Woody Harrelson middle-aged people, and some of those people are female people, and some of those people are people of color, and some of those people are walking carpets, and some of those people are robots. I think the preview set the tone perfectly, which is not this dour empire we must fight against as rogues. But instead it's just, are you ready to have a fun space adventure? Yeah, and that's not a slam against Rogue One. I think Rogue One is, though I have some problems with the movie, I think it was a really novel way to do a Star Wars standalone. Same thing here, although I guess jury's still out. If it's a home run, I don't think they're killing off Han Solo, Lando Calrissian, Chewbacca, and the Millennium Falcon at the end of this movie.
What?
I think the future is a bit more open there, but this reset my expectations from this is a troubled property, you know, the bloodbath of all those being fired behind it and all the reshoots and the, you know, to, oh, I'm going to have a fun, I'm going to see a fun popcorn Star Wars movie like many Star Wars movies have been in the past. You know, I think there was a large degree of that to Force Awakens. Then you had all the theory stuff, but original Star Wars, Return of the Jedi, and two, the first two of the three prequels were a lot of fun on first viewing and on repeat viewing. Does the experience change for any movie? Sure, but I'm expecting to have a nice fun time where we fight the bad guys with slightly not bad guys.
If you can't be pumped about seeing Donald Glover as Lando Calrissian, okay, it is full-on glory, space pimp, furry coat, Sabacc-playing, Falcon-owning days, okay? Yes, it's a Han Solo film, but quickly the attention went there, as I've been saying for a long time. This is going to make him a megawatt star. He's incredibly talented. The only thing he lacks at this point is massive exposure. Spider-Man Homecoming definitely helped, but this is going to firmly plant him as an A-lister, this role. So much so, Matt, there's already talk that Lando will get his own spinoff like this, or appear heavily in one that is not necessarily tethered to him, but that he can appear in. I know there's discussion that Alden Ehrenreich is, oh, he doesn't look like Han Solo and all this other stuff. And there's this one guy who's a dead ringer for Harrison Ford that people are saying you should have hired this guy because he does an impression of Harrison Ford. Stop. That's not how acting works. You don't hire impressionists of people. Otherwise, Rich Little would be doing all of these characters, and that's not going to happen. Give him an opportunity in this role, because another thing that's been whispered about this is that they needed to bring in an acting coach for him and all that. You know, you're never going to go wrong with Chewie. Emilia Clarke as Kira here just completely sells the female appeal. That Tandy Newton, you got Phoebe Waller-Bridge playing a cobbled together droid that does handshakes with Lando. This will not be a $600 million domestic film. Spoiler alert. It's still going to be a force to be reckoned with. Okay. And like we're saying, this is going to be an amusing space yarn. There's too much talent behind this film for it to be an absolute dud. And people were, oh, they're hiding it from us. They know they're sitting on a piece of garbage. They're not going to show us until 5 minutes before. And then you go. I mean, and we could talk a little bit as it's on our agenda today. We're gonna get to Cloverfield and talk a little bit there about some possible comparisons with the unusual approach they took there. But if you're worried about Solo, you really shouldn't be. The only thing that worried me with anything that I saw, the logo and the way they did it felt a little corny. It just didn't feel finished. But other than that, I got no worries.
I like the slant on the logo. I think that the rendering on the logo was a little.
That's the
primary color. Yeah.
Referring to and it looked like maybe they not played around with it enough. If you're looking at the logo as the logo is on the poster, and here we are, Matt, saying that my biggest qualm is a logo.
Right.
Okay.
The logo as presented in motion in the teaser trailer.
Right. Yeah. Which I didn't care for, but everything else I'm sold. I'd be there anyway. But I think a lot of other people were, you know, their anxiety was assuaged by that. And we're going to be seeing more of that. That's running with Black Panther. More and more people will be exposed to it. And, you know, there've been a lot of stills from the film now that have started to make the rounds. This is a great one. We've seen the hallway of the Falcon as it is presented in its pristine stage. There's another one of the rest of the back of the Falcon interior gleaming and shining and new. And there's a picture of Han and Woody Harrelson's Tobias Beckett character and Chewie sitting together there around the hollow chess table. That's an epic shot. That's just a great, great shot. There's another one of the snow space train we saw quickly in just the teaser that has Han and Chewie on it. They're going to rob a snow space train in this movie, Matt. They're going to have some fun in this movie. We're going to have some fun when we go and watch this movie. And then when we podcast this movie, nobody should be worried about this movie.
As for the marketing timetable, I think this feeds nicely into some of the later on discussions, as you mentioned, particularly with Cloverfield. You know, when people are familiar with a property, you don't need to market it the same as something that's new.
Correct.
You know, I think back to the jaw-dropping Super Bowl commercial for Independence Day, which, you know, the commercial aired 6 months before the movie came out, and you just said, what in the world is that? What is going on? I can't believe what I just saw. Yeah, because they need to go from nothing to buzz. With this, it's a Star Wars movie with a host of familiar characters doing familiar scoundrel things. Like, you get the concept from Jump Street, and, you know, if it's a fun movie, you're going to take other people to see it, so they can... They can spring this upon the world, regardless of whether that means it's a, you know, it's a sleeper reveal or it's a secret reveal or not. Also, here's just the fact. You know, Last Jedi, it's in the last couple of weeks that it truly has wound down at the box office. You're not going to be cross-pollinating your Star Wars marketing and have anybody confused as to what movie they're going to see right now. The right now being, let's say, December, January. The marketing was always going to come out, I'm sure, after Last Jedi wound down. And the fact that there's never been a Star Wars Super Bowl spot, well, okay, the first three... actually, I take that back. Pete, did the prequel trilogy come out in May? May's?
It did, but they did not do Super Bowl spots either. The teaser and the trailer for Phantom Menace were tied to theatrical releases. The only TV specific release of a trailer they did for the prequels goes to Attack of the Clones. Fox at that time, they did it as a stunt to get you to tune into Malcolm in the Middle. And then they showed that. That's the only time they geared it to anything on TV prior to what happened the other night.
So bottom line, Star Wars is sinking. Star Wars is falling apart. Star Wars
is done.
Triumphant.
It's
again.
It's over, right? Same way as, you know, we can't make 17 Marvel movies and hope that people would see an 18th in a connected story. That'll never work, right, Matt?
Yeah. More Marvel in a bit and yeah, not on the agenda, but worth pondering about for 2 seconds is just the idea that Black Panther is going to explode. The critical consensus is through the roof. The buzz is through the roof.
Go back, you know, and listen, we've been calling it for some time. I've been saying it's going to be breaking Deadpool's record set 2 years ago for a long time. Matt's on record at 125 million. I'm going
for 3 days. 125 for three, 145 for four. It is a holiday weekend.
I'm going north of that. And yeah, it's a tremendous film. And this is going to inspire a lot of people. Let's just put it, let's keep it everybody. Because that's what it is. It's everybody. It's what society looks like. It's everybody. And we'll be bringing you that next week. Matt, let's get to the other empire, if we could.
Yes, some info coming out this week on Disney's forthcoming streaming service. Deadline had an exclusive on that, which normally means, hey, I like you, reporter from one outlet. I'm going to throw you a bone. But here's what's known so far. It is still scheduled to come out fall of 2019. It is at this point, and I want to stress at this point because I think it could change, but at this point, it is not going to be Hulu. It's going to be its own thing. Mm-hmm. They're not going to carry any R-rated content. However, if any of that is made in the Disney sphere or the Disney post-20th Century Fox purchase sphere, and it is meant for streaming, it would go to Hulu, which I think is smart because right now the best thing on Hulu is one of the best shows on television maybe ever in Handmaid's Tale. But there's that. And they're definitely working on something Star Wars, probably live action, almost certainly live action, maybe a second Star Wars thing. And Pete, I've heard reference to possibly a Marvel live action as well, although none of it the stuff that is on Hulu. Pardon me, none of it the stuff that is on Netflix.
Yeah, and I know there's been a lot of concern that the Netflix stuff would get taken like their ball and go home to Disney or what have you. That's not going to happen. I continue to think, I think, Matt, maybe you share a little bit of the opinion, this may be the biggest gambit of all time for Disney to buy Netflix, in the threat alone that they're going to have their own streaming service, and perhaps Disney then swallows up Netflix. Although the no R content thing worries me for a couple different reasons. I mean, it'll always work for Disney for that, but there's no way we can have a lot of the great things that have come through Netflix without having multiple levels and ratings of content. You need that. And, you know, I think Disney ultimately will come around to that and realize, wow, we age authenticate people who are coming on to check out the show with the things the little kids shouldn't see or whatever it is. The idea that people just want family-friendly content, I get it. But at the same time, I think you have to offer to all. And there's nothing wrong with doing that. You also don't have to watch the things that, you know, mommy or daddy might, you know, have made you cover up your eyes for 6 months ago, and now you're an adult, whatever.
I think from a business point of view, the way this plan is coming together, I think it makes a ton of sense if I'm a studio, or if I own two studios, as Disney will shortly, or if you include their mini studios, you know, owns, I think with Fox and everything that is currently Disney, it's like 60% of the box office business from 2017 or something like that. But the notion that they can build this thing ground up, and, you know, Disney is big on keeping its own money in the ecosystem. So the fact that they can really say, hey, we own Lady and the Tramp, we're going to do a Lady and the Tramp something, whether it's a streaming movie or an animated or a live action or whatever it's going to be, we already own it. It's people already know what it is. We're going to pay ABC Studios to make this thing so it gets all kept in house. And now it's an audience who's familiar with the brand and familiar with the property and so on and so forth. I think that's smart. Assuming that Disney keeps Hulu, and people smarter than you and I have speculated as to whether from a regulatory sense or whether with Comcast now as the minority partner on Hulu, if that'll be possible. But let's just say they do. I think it's smart to keep those brands separate because Hulu does have some of that edgier stuff. And then Disney, part of the Disney streaming world, but not what we're calling the Disney streaming service, is going to be them taking ESPN streaming. So I think they're looking at family-friendly, they're looking at adult-oriented with Hulu, they're looking at sports-oriented with ESPN, and, you know, to me that makes sense. And for all the, you know, let's rewind 6 months ago to CBS All Access, you know, I can't pay for another streaming thing. Listen, Disney's planning on doing what many of us are increasingly talking about, which is cut that cable, maybe not completely, but, you know, cut. If you're used to paying X amount for TV now, let's just say, you know, the number I had in discussion with my wife was about $100 a month for the cable plan we have, plus Stars and sometimes HBO and Netflix and Hulu and so on and so forth. All Disney needs to do is get you to come in at less than $100. So if you're going to pay $8 a month for Disney streaming and $10 a month for ESPN, if that's your thing, and $9 a month for Hulu, if that's your thing, and then throw some Netflix in there and whatever, and it comes in as a total of $60, you're going to feel like you're a winner, and you're going to feel like, hey, I can cancel easily online. It's not the hassle of calling a cable company. And to me, this feels win-win-win for where we're going to be 5 years from now, 10 years from now.
I think that you've seen the future, Matt. I think the future is now that people are cutting these gigantic, dinosaur, unresponsive monopoly companies, as I say this, over Comcast bandwidth, which is perennially one of the worst companies in the country. Its days are numbered. It doesn't even understand that. And it's about time and for people to have. And now you'll just take your content a la carte. All right. You carve up what you may have paid in the past and you get a couple of these other ones. As we cover Star Trek Discovery, the laughable notion that a fan base and what they'll spend on memorabilia or conventions or whatever, and they can't pay for a month, $5.99, what is it, $9.99 for the non-commercial option to watch and support this show, so there'll be more of it in the Star Trek name. It's the way it's done now. The reference you made before to Hulu and the idea that if Disney turned Hulu into its streaming service, because let's be honest, the biggest holdup here for Disney is that of infrastructure. They need to create from scratch their own network, and that's not easy.
But they kind of do already. Major League Baseball had put together its streaming infrastructure that it then sold to other sports leagues, including the NHL. Disney has bought that. So the technology end they have. Now, do they need to put together a pleasing user interface and customer service and all that? Yeah, but I feel like that's small potatoes compared to how do you make this work? How do you make video go? They already own that.
I agree with you with a small caveat. That user experience is very important. And being as, Matt, we have had some poor experiences on one particular new streaming service and nothing but superior service on the two more established ones, I wonder. But you mentioned Hulu. For me, The Handmaid's Tale, something you and I have both really gotten into in this last little bit, you know, jumping into some other things in Hulu now that we've podcasted the entire first season of Runaways. There's a place in this world for that content, and sad to say it wouldn't appear on a Disney streaming. I just think you're short-sighted in terms of doing that. We're going to talk about Deadpool 2 today. That, thank goodness, started under another studio, and now that it's owned as things move forward by Disney, they understand tonally they're hitting a home run with what they have right now, and they need to continue to do that instead of the short-sighted, well, we can't have an R rating for any of our childlike viewers. And again, you want to watch, you know, things that are G and PG, maybe stretch it to PG-13 when you're feeling crazy. That's fine. That's you are entitled to that. But we should have things across all ratings levels for people. I just think you limit your audience when you do that.
Wrapping up the streaming conversation, it's all about content. I mean, we went to Hulu. I got Hulu. You already had it. I got Hulu for Runaways, got a free month, paid for the next one. I had every intention of canceling at the end of that 1 month I paid for. I even said to my wife, hey, let's squeeze in Handmaid's Tale before this is over. Even if we really love it, we'll get rid of Hulu because I don't want to add another thing.
Mm-hmm.
I had this experience of being just beyond floored by the narrative mastery of Handmaid's Tale, then still I was like, well, that was good, but there's nothing really there. Well, there's this one James Bond thing that I was like, still, I don't want to add it. Boom. They had all 330 episodes of ER. And I'm like, shoot, you know what? For $7 a month, we're watching ER every night. This is fantastic.
I'll do that in 4 months before Handmaid's Tale season 2 comes on. No problem. All these other shows we do.
Exactly. I'll keep it for these next couple of months. Then Handmaid's Tale comes back. Then I'll reassess. Same thing. Yep. Not for nothing, Pete. We're recording this on February 9th. The 1 month I was charged for the next month of CBS All Access 2 days ago. I know what I'm doing on Monday. On Monday, I'm canceling CBS All Access because there's nothing there that isn't Star Trek. And the month will run out and May 7th will come and it won't work anymore. And you know what? Is some of that I'm annoyed at the price of their thing relative to only having one show in there that I watch? Yeah, but here's the flip side. You tell me that Jordan Peele's Twilight Zone is going to be on in, I don't know, pick a month, August? I'll be there first night. Carte blanche to check it out. And of course, I'll be back for Star Trek. So my point is this, the difference in my mind, even though Hulu was great and we loved Runaways and Handmaid's Tale is fantastic, I was all set to get rid of that. It's one show, ER, that made the difference. Same thing, All Access. All right, their customer service is okay and their PR department is presumptive and arrogant. Still, they're one show away from getting me back, but it's live show to show.
Listen, you got to beat the king to be the king, and bringing it back to Netflix, Matt, a month from yesterday, we're going to be looking at Jessica Jones in our eyes, and we've already seen a little bit more as of this recording.
Yes, in the next week or so, we're definitely going to dig into that preview trailer. We're going to dig into the second season for our own preview. Don't want to spoil that quite yet, but I am beyond thrilled to know that there's more Jessica Jones coming, and she can't return soon enough, but returning on International Women's Day is one heck of a way to come back.
With every single episode in season 2 directed by a woman, which, given some of the response to Benioff and Weiss being named as these creators for another Star Wars movie series. We don't know how many films, and the calls of, where are the women? Where are the people of color? I think it's incredibly timely that that's going to be part of the conversation over this next month as Jessica Jones season 2 comes to air.
Pete, let's move away, although not too far away from Disney owned at the end of the day, but let's move away from Disney filmed entertainment. Let's move away to Venom, the movie that asks you, will you believe that a Spider-Man with no Spider-Man nor Venom in the preview, man?
Yeah, this has every hallmark of being a dud. And they seem to know it. My favorite take on this was, hey, I liked when Eddie Brock walked down a street and then he walked into a convenience store. Get hype. Because that's all you got. Yeah, there was one shot of the symbiote in a container. There seems maybe they might be doing the Lethal Protector storyline. We still don't have definitive answers. I've heard both ends that the MCU Spider-Man makes an appearance. I've heard he does not make an appearance. You kind of need to let people know what the thing is. If you did not know Venom, Matt, and there are people who will see this preview with Black Panther who know Venom and know what to expect and know that, all right, Tom Hardy is screaming because he's going to become a nasty black suited spider dude. And then there are other people going to go, oh, he has poison in him, doesn't he? That's sad. He's like, even more sad, less green Incredible Hulk.
All I know is this, Pete, is I see most of these comic book movies eventually with my wife, whether it's at the movies, whether it's streaming, rental, whatever. And we watch the preview, and she's like, huh. And I'm like, well, you know, it's got a Spider-Man connection, right? She's like, oh, yeah, no, I know the name Venom. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm like, but what do you think? You know, what do you think? She's like, I think it's like another Tom Hardy movie. And I was like, all set to be like, yeah, handsome Tom Hardy. And then she said, you know, another Tom Hardy movie where he's just boring all the time. Wow. I was like, oh, I'm like, but that's handsome Tom Hardy. And if you're not into that, but you're like, hey, Vin Diesel, hey, The Rock, hey, whoever, you know, hey, the Marvel Chrises, it's like, ooh, that's not good. Because if I like the comic book movies and she's cool going to see them, and he's easy on the eyes, and I'm okay with an R-rated comic book movie, shouldn't my wife and I be going to see this at some point, whether it's in the movies or whatever, and instead it's, I'm okay.
I think that was their greatest hope, and now it's not. I'll do you one further. You bring in my better half, and she has no idea who or what Venom is, and if she is to see this trailer, she's not going to see this film. there are people who know this character who are going to go see it because of the love for the character, and they need to know what goes on with this. There's us who have to go see it. But, you know, people like my wife, who they hope to, because you hope to sell the most tickets possible, they're not going to get, because there's nothing interesting in this trailer. You make a Venom trailer without Venom.
Yeah, like if the title card was like Madness, you know, or The Poison, or something kind of M. Night Shyamalan-ish, you know, like
right.
The Fear Fog, you'd be like, you'd have the same reaction. It's, you know what I mean? Like, maybe you'd be confused why there was the Marvel flippy pages at the beginning. You take out that, and you take out the title card Venom, what distinguishes this movie?
And, yeah, the voiceover, for me, broke it. Like, give me some idea of who is doing the voiceover. It's not Tom Hardy. It's not another character that we've been exposed to yet in some kind of universe this may or may not occupy. You know, it takes 2 seconds to figure out a way with whoever was doing the voiceover to couch it in some kind of context. Yeah, this thing looks really worrisome. But take heart, Matt, because while the Spidey guy is off fighting an Infinity War over two movies and then a solo movie, it'll be just enough time to burn off the memory if this is a horrible Venom movie. Maybe it's great and we just don't know yet. But if it's horrible, to burn it off, to have the rights revert, and then while Tom Holland, Spider-Man, is in his glory in his fifth Avengers Spider-Man movie, then you can bring Venom back to the MCU and do it right.
Well, I don't fault Sony, but I think in their mind it's like, oh man, we don't know how to make a Spider-Man regular movie, so they partner up and, you know, they receive all the financial rewards, so on and so forth. Well, what else can we do with Spider-Man? Hey, there's a couple R-rated movies out there. What's Spider-Man R-rated? Venom. Let's do that. What else is out there that's successful? Animated. Let's do Spider-Verse animated. I feel like there's a certain aspect of what I just described with those three options where it's throw stuff against the wall and make it stick, because it's great that Sony made a ton of money off Homecoming. They also must have known that they're sitting there doing very little as a studio, as an infrastructure. Right. And quite frankly, probably there's people in Hollywood laughing at them going, oh, well, it's great you make money, but after you make the money, you want to know that you've made great art, or it's pop art or whatever, and you didn't make this. You paid some bills, signed some checks, and then got money in return. You could have done real estate if you wanted to do that. You could have done a zillion of other jobs. Let's sell yachts, you know, whatever it might be.
And these characters are beloved, you know, hearing from a lot of people that, wow, I love Venom. I love reading the comics with Venom. And it would be nice if they put Venom in the Venom trailer. But yeah, I mean, that's where you wind up with. Not all of these studio execs, Matt, as we know, are the geniuses. But let's talk about where there is some real genius level talent right now.
Yes, that latest Deadpool trailer that starts out grim and serious. And it was only really at that point that I was like, oh my goodness, there is a tonal difference between Deadpool and Cable, and this resolves it to say, guess what? You're going to have your mashed potatoes and your peas, and it's going to be fun.
Well, it takes just a little bit into that trailer. Obviously, the joke about Cable's non-digitally animated arm just yet. And we break the fourth wall, as, of course, Deadpool is wont and entirely capable of doing. And it becomes a masterpiece. The marketing of these films gets better and better and better.
And to add to it, toy Deadpool dressed, you know, dressed as Sheriff Woody from Toy Story, down to both toys having Wade written on the foot. Guess what? They're not concerned about the Disney problem when Deadpool becomes a Disney property. And if they are, they're basically saying, we made the first one for $55 million and it made $750 million. It made you so much money, you're not going to complain. We have a winner here. Right.
Let's remember, there has been, it's funny, nobody's freaking out about Deadpool 2 because it's been moved up a month to the spot that New Mutants, remember that, Matt? Was going to have between Avengers Infinity War and Solo. How big a month is Josh Brolin going to have between Thanos and Cable? And then...
Can he show up in Solo? Is it too late to add him?
and then let's remember, too, there was a directorial change from the original Deadpool to this. But they're absolutely killing it in terms of understanding character as related to the content, to the point where we get the joke about the digital mustache from Justice League with the digital arm there, which was sublime.
Bottom line, this is a preview that hits the tone perfectly. It looks more jam-packed than the last one, which I think is appropriate because the last one could hardly have been budgeted lower. And I know that many smiles were on faces at the return of Dopinder, the taxi driver.
Mm-hmm. And the new characters we're going to meet, Matt, there's some belief we may get the X-Force. But yeah, there's so much to look for in this film. In that trailer alone, they could not give us anything more until it comes out. And I think people would be ready.
Well, let's move on now to some other Marvel news from the week. That of the reveal of the Marvel class photo that was taken last October. And I still, insert synonym for Marvel, I'm still amazed at all the faces that are in this picture and how big a darned file it is. You can zoom in and read the numbers on the equipment that are behind some of the people. You can see light switches on the wall behind them, let alone all of these faces there together.
I like it. I got a big problem with it. And I think Matt has a similar problem with it. And I think any fan of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has the same problem with it. Where is Clark? Greg, we were with him the day that was shot.
I know that's what was said. That's the excuse given. And I think certainly
with the rest of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. cast, Matt, at Madison Square Garden. So do they really think they could send everybody but him and not have been able to do it. The other thing I've brought up with Matt, he was directing his TV directorial debut episode for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. around that time. So I wonder if it was just too much to try to get him to Atlanta, take the picture, get him back, you know, that type of thing. But it's a fairly big oversight. He did bring the Avengers together, and he was in how many of those films? Iron Man, Iron Man 2, Thor, Avengers 1. So fairly big oversight.
I just hope it's not a case that, well, you're bigger for the TV stuff now. You went over to that side, even though, you know, we wrote you out. And then the guy who wrote you out, he helped create a show in which you returned through some of the, you know, through some of the comic book means that killed you off and whatnot. I hope it's not that. I hope it's just, hey, there was no Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. at San Diego. Hey, we've had this date circled for New York Comic Con for a long time, and it's part of the jam-packed Saturday and so on and so forth, and sorry, you're already committed to that, so no go. I do agree, though, at the end of the day, it is an oversight. Pete, I keep searching the picture. Oh, maybe under the risers there's no.
People have edited him in. I've seen photos where he's been put in with sunglasses, without the sunglasses, in the pose where he's been stabbed by Loki's scepter. You know, there's all sorts of great edits. Haley Atwell made it, though, Matt. They extended the invite to her, and you know, she's big in both sides of this cinematic universe. So yeah, I was just, you know, I'm looking through it, I'm like, wait, where's Clark? Where's Coulson, man? And I know it's spawned even conspiracy theories like, okay, if you're not caught up on your Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. through episode 10 of season 5, cover your ears, I'll give you 3 seconds. You know, the whole Coulson is dying thing, there's some concern that's going to happen much sooner than we think, and he's going to be gone from the show, and he's now out of this universe. There's some people who have taken it, Matt, to a nefarious level.
I think it's much easier to blame it on, you know, rock solid scheduling conflict. It's much easier to blame it on petty, you know, TV versus movie conflict. Either of those are more acceptable than, hey, Pete, they got all these people into this picture. You know, hearkening back to the 30s and the 40s when there was the stable of stars that would be at other studios. That's that, there, you know, there's a callback to all of that in this, but secretly he's been left off because Kevin Feige was like, whoa, this is going to conflict with the season 5 pod 2 storyline of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Therefore, you know, we're going to get I don't know. I mean, I don't mean to call out anybody as low person on the totem pole, but, you know, we're going to get Sean Gunn's brother, who is best known as playing that guy on Gilmore Girls, and we're going to put him all the way to the left, but we're not going to get Clark Gregg because it has story implications.
Listen, I stand by it being an oversight. I don't know if, you know, Marvel maybe has a Learjet they could have sent up to New York to grab Clark, whatever. I mean, all right, just to get one guy, but look at how many you got. What is it, 71 people in there? Whatever the number is, it's hard to imagine that some workaround couldn't have been arranged given what he meant, particularly in the foundation of that. I mean, he's bedrock, Matt, for that universe.
Separate from the lack of Clark Gregg, it is interesting to look at the picture just in terms of I'll say ego, although I don't want to assume that anybody is you know, more egotistical than the rest of the Hollywood bunch, but to just say, all right, well, Feige next to Downey, and if anything, Downey kind of most center. Okay, that makes sense. Then who is behind them? It's Chris Evans and Stan Lee. That makes sense. Then there's definitely this hierarchy of people to the left and right of them and people above them. And then it kind of spreads out from there all the way to, you know, guy in blue shirt with 4 days worth of beard on his face, who I think is on the creative end and not an actor, but he's two people away from Tessa Thompson in a blazer, matching suit pants and a bra. Things of that, where it's like, hey, sorry, Karen Gillan, you're going to go almost all the way over to the one side in between creative guy and creative guy, and there, in front of creative guy.
There are two other notable absences, one being Natalie Portman. Okay, they have made their peace, though, that character has moved on with Thor Ragnarok, and, you know, she is busy promoting a new film right now, although she wasn't back in October, but whatever.
She has sour grapes with Marvel Studios, in part because they didn't hire Patty Jenkins for Dark World, which in retrospect seems dumb. I don't know that Patty Jenkins would have, I mean, I don't have a big beef with Dark World, I think a lot of people do. I don't know that Patty Jenkins would have made it better under the Marvel Studio system as it was then versus right. as it is now, but yeah, she's washed her hands of Marvel. So that's how that goes, good, bad, or indifferent.
And it happens, again, with the massive number of characters and talent that we're dealing with, that's inevitable. And then Lupita Nyong'o could not make the photo as well, but she was busy. She's making Lion King, right?
Well, if she's busy, too busy making Lion King, but her Lion King director is there 10 feet from the center of Downey and Feige.
This is true. This is true, yes.
And I mean, look, if Jon Favreau isn't on set to tell you in a motion capture suit, you know, act more like the animal you're portraying, you know, like, I don't know, but certainly, I mean, this is a spectacular picture. The idea that they did take this picture for real and that this isn't stuff pasted together, either you were there for the day or you weren't. I mean, I think certain quibbles, in my mind, certain quibbles can be made, like I'd have Scarlett Johansson closer to the center, although she is fairly close, but not as close as Gwyneth Paltrow and stuff like that. That's where you get into the, I'm glad I don't live in that world where those things make a difference to me. And, you know, closeness to the center point shared by Evans, Stanley, Feige, and Downey, I'm not worried about that stuff. I will mention one little thing, Pete, that repeated scans. This is the only person I've found who's done this. Taika Waititi is the only person who is standing in such a way so you can see his name chair, you know, the Hollywood name yes. chair. He's standing in a way so he's by his name. Everybody else, certainly many of them do not require, you know, being named. You know their name, but darned if he's not the only guy who's got his name on screen.
Yeah, and with as many moving parts as that, to be able to do that, I think was a small miracle. We may never see something like this again.
Which the accompanying video that Chris Hemsworth, or Chris Hemsworth says in the accompanying Marvel video, something that he had said to the press as well. Heck, it might have been the same comment at the same moment that was just recycled for some of the press articles. But just the idea that some of these people won't be around anymore, or words to that effect. I mean, floating again, you're going to see people killed off in one of these next two movies. My thought is in the next movie, and that's it. And they're committed to, and there's not the regeneration ooze for this person or that person. Quite frankly, I'm thinking it's Robert Downey Jr., but whatever it is, just this notion of they're capturing this now because they can't do this for Marvel Studios the 11th year.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly something to discuss. I love that we even have this photo as an idea, as a concept, in terms of harkening back, as you said earlier, to that bygone era of Hollywood.
Yeah, I mean, it's it's remarkable that this is who has made their way through on both ends. And, you know, I don't, a lot of these creative people, I would not know. Guy in white hat on forklift in top left. I would
you
not
don't know,
know
guy
him.
In white hat. Come on, man.
But I mean, these are all people whose names I think I've seen on the movies, certainly. People who certainly have passed the test in terms of having contributed greatly, even if I don't know their name. I did get a chuckle, you know, seeing Tom Holland. I mean, of course, he's part of the MCU, but then also simultaneously, kind of, sort of not, because of that whole Sony deal. But just a remarkable, a truly, truly remarkable picture. And hopefully one that stands the test of time. I mean, I think the public relations jury, perhaps a more serious jury, is still out on Michael Douglas, on Joss Whedon. Certainly their contributions creatively to this picture and all that it represents are great. You know, hopefully all these people have behaved and will behave appropriately for all time, so that this picture might stand the test of time as well.
Well, speaking of time, Matt, normally we talk about some time, if you're the Han Solo movie, about 4 months between when you see some moving images and when you watch the 2-hour moving image. But on Super Bowl Sunday, that changed forever.
It did. There was the preview of the Cloverfield sequel, prequel, requel, and then revealed on social media that, oh no, it's not just coming to Netflix, it's coming to Netflix tonight.
Yes, carrying the coming very soon during the commercial, the Cloverfield paradox, and people like myself, big fan of the first two films, got really excited. The trailer on the Super Bowl announced, you know, 10 years ago, the original Cloverfield, and it's hard to believe it's been that long. And then 2 years ago, we had the 10 Cloverfield Lane film. There's this one, which went through development as both the God Particle and then as Cloverfield Station, and then got its title. The actors in the film, Matt, did not know until slightly earlier on Sunday the film would be available on Netflix that night. Many, 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 many Netflix employees did not know the film would be available until that night. Kudos to Bad Robot, to J.J. Abrams, the mystery box, Matt, at its finest. There's still another Cloverfield movie slated to come this year.
Well, I give them a ton of credit. I think it's worth mentioning that part of the reason this movie, which was filmed June to September 2016 and originally on Paramount's slate for February to October 2017, there's a reason it didn't come out then, at least from the critical point of view. I have not seen it, but the fact—
I saw it. I watched it that night. I watched it Sunday night. It's not excellent. It's not awful.
Do you think the 18% on Rotten Tomatoes is— where does that
fit? I don't think it's an 18%. No, no. Would I peg it in the 60 to 70 ish? I think that would be a more fair assessment. What's the audience score, Matt?
I will tell you in one moment. I think that it's interesting. Look, I'm not trying to bag on the movie. You've enjoyed it. I have not seen it. I don't know that I'm in a huge rush to see it, but
have you seen 10 Cloverfield Lane?
I have not.
You have not. Okay. So you're admittedly not a fan, a devotee, because let's remember, we're talking teasers and trailers. The first Cloverfield teaser came in July of 2007 with the original Transformers film. And there were so many theories as to what Cloverfield was. My favorite, Matt, that it was a stealth Voltron movie that the Voltron robot had ripped off the Statue of Liberty's head and thrown it down a street. And people, this is a true story. You can go back and look at this. People pored over that footage to the point where there was an entire camp of internet sleuths who thought they had isolated a line from the trailer that says, "It's a lion, it's a lion."
Well, I give Netflix a ton of credit for taking a movie that perhaps was on the that was ready for a rebound. And again, having not seen it, I have no beef against it, good or bad. But if this was a movie whose stock had fallen from Paramount, why it would, I don't know. Paramount is in trouble because it doesn't release enough movies to fund more movies and things of that sort. But I digress. If Netflix was able to pick this up at a price that made sense to them, I mean, we're talking about it now, right? I mean, go back and listen, dear listeners, to our 10 Cloverfield Lane podcast. Oh, wait, there wasn't one. We may have mentioned it in passing, but we've now spent more time talking about this than the other, and it's because the marketing thing that it did and the way it ended up on Netflix. So you got to give them credit there.
There's a precedent now, and I think this will be something that they'll consider. Now, this is a perfect storm. There's buzz surrounding this franchise. You could put Cloverfield on a poster that had a cardboard box. Let's say, Matt, ready? I'm going to say, Cloverfield, you are going to look where you are right now in your end of the studio and find an object, and then we're going to put that on a poster and people will watch it. So the title of our forthcoming Cloverfield movie is The Cloverfield
Canister.
Boom.
Well, and
people will line up. People will be buzzing. Hashtag Cloverfield Canister. Get it out there on social media.
It is interesting, this notion that Paramount and Bad Robot bought the rights to the spec script, the seller, and then turned that idea into a Cloverfield thing. Same thing, the guy that wrote the original script for his screenplay, God Particle, it was acquired by Bad Robot, and then it was, where did I just see this here? It was during, I just had it in front of me. It was during the production of the movie that the writer found out that he was working on a Cloverfield movie.
Yes.
And had to rewrite it, which is awesome too.
Understand too that's the way they're playing this bigger game. And J.J. Abrams was asked about this as he was preparing to go work on Star Wars Episode 9, which will destroy childhoods again after your childhood is destroyed by Han Solo in Christmas of 2019. He said that, you know, having done Lost and all the, you know, listen, I'm talking on the other end of a microphone to a Lost podcaster, so I don't need to repeat this story to him, but the hey, you didn't plan this all out from the start. You didn't know how six seasons was going to go from Jump Street. Well, that's not always how it goes. And you can go back and plug things in. One of the coolest things I've seen, they said there's two Easter eggs that haven't been found in this new film. There are many that are right in your face that are apparent. And even then, you don't need to know the other films to get this movie. Although what this one will do now, it already has, is kindle interest in the first two. But really and completely unintentionally done. And there again, the internet for finding this in the original Cloverfield and in this film. There are explosions at the exact same minute time in both.
Wow, that is interesting.
Completely unintentional, brought to their attention that it elicited a wow from the creatives who made this.
Hey, sometimes it's coincidence, sometimes it's on purpose, regardless.
A more pompous individual says, yes, yes, there are.
Well, Pete, we're talking Deadpool sequel, we've talked Cloverfield sequel. Something else from the Super Bowl was a much improved trailer for the Jurassic World sequel entitled Jurassic World 2, More Jurassic Worlds. And I don't know how much time we're going to spend on this. I will say I went from loving the first movie to raspberrying number two after its teaser. And now I feel more better about the movie, but I don't feel compelled to go see it, I don't think.
I feel a little bit better. That first trailer is awful. This one is improved, but I still, Matt, ask the same question. Why do the dinosaur movie people hate their dinosaurs?
Part of what's so great about the first Jurassic World, and I would argue the first Jurassic Park, is you get that beginning. You open with the premise of this world of wonder around dinosaurs and something that we all share back to our childhoods, and this sense of this age before what we can conceive now. Then personally for me, you know, in Jurassic World, you layer in some of the nods and winks to the Disney World experience that they reinterpret for Jurassic World, and that's an added layer of entertainment. I mean, if this is they go back to the place again to try and straighten things out again against the concerned thing, I don't quite know what to say. So, Pete, what's your feelings on Jurassic World 2, More Worlds, More Jurassics?
I reserve the right to withhold judgment until I see more, but as of right now, I'm really on the fence with this.
Last thing, Pete, to come out of the last week in this mammoth week of news, was the confirmation of a return date for Westworld. Westworld is probably the most fun I've had with a TV show since Lost. We
says a guy who needs to watch The Leftovers, also on the Westworld channel.
Is Westworld as fun as Leftovers? I mean, I'm not saying that Westworld
fun, Matt. If you don't define fun as what my colleague and the neighbor of your parents calls emotional torture porn, then you don't know what fun is.
I admit that there are greater shows than Westworld. There are more important shows. Heck, even though I've watched in the last couple months, I mean, again, Handmaid's Tale is just stunning. It is stunning. I mean, I would propose we do a podcast, but Pete, I think that we are.
When?
A, when, and B, you know what? I think we'll leave that to people with a better perspective of that show than us, shall we say.
Yes.
But just fun in terms of the conceit of it, the play along at home, the theories, all of that. I'm certainly not trying to make light of any of the, you know, kind of any of the more sexualized elements of the show, but just as a complete package of play along, there's a mystery, are you starting to pick up on stuff, that discussion that picks up when the episode ends, that discussion that picks up from that blog you read, that column you read, that podcast you listen to. I'm totally psyched for Westworld returning on April 22nd. And I want to point out that we had dug a little bit, and we can't take credit for this as a theory, but we had helped, you know, we had shared on our Twitter a Reddit theory that it would be coming out that Sunday or the following Sunday. So hey, tune into Fantastic Geek to make sure you're up with all the theories.
Absolutely. You know, we have Red Sox Nation, Matt. There's Yankee Universe, but Fantastic Geek Galaxy, particularly those luminaries, those stars in it, Matt, who go to patreon.com/fantasticgeek and are able to, one, get the exclusive content that every contributor gets, and then two, pick their perks. I mean, come on.
They are the space winds beneath our wings, and we fly, fly, fly because of those pals on patreon.com /fantasticgeek, always keeping us going, always keeping us. We have our own little Cloverfield paradoxes, secret plans for mysterious future release that might see their way first on Patreon, maybe only on Patreon. But enough of that, Pete. Enough secrets. Let's talk about the thing that's out there the most. How can people be in touch with you on Twitter?
If you're not going to pay at the Cloverfield Lane package in order to come into the bunker with Matt during an extinction level event, you can go to Twitter and find me at Peter, P-I-E-T-E-R-J, Ketelaar, K-E-T-E-L-A-A-R, 9,780 followers. Can't be wrong.
And while I'm personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost, you can be in touch with the podcast anytime you like. Visit fantasticgeek.com, email fantasticgeek@gmail.com. Check us out on Twitter and Instagram, where we are Fantastic Geek as well. But wait, Pete, there's more!
Facebook.com/fantasticgeek with the PH, all one word. Like it today.
Well, Pete, everybody who's listening to this is listening to it on the Pop Culture Podcast feed. We will be back in the next several days to talk the season one finale of Star Trek Discovery. We'll get some more Pop Culture Podcast goodness during this short S.H.I.E.L.D. break. Definitely in about 10 days or so, we'll be doing a season one wrap-up for Discovery. Certainly Black Panther not far behind as well. And the adventure from there continues.
Absolutely. Got to get in on it. So thanks for listening.
With that, Pete, I will say adios to all our listeners and give you the final word.
Cloverfield.